Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Welcome back to another episode of the 21CD podcast. We are John and
AJ
here for another episode. But first, there's a couple things I wanted to go over before we get ripping and roaring. Wanted to thank all you guys for all the love on the last episode. The review of the Oliver Anthony song, Rich Men North of Richmond, was an epic success. So for all of you that are coming from that video and tuned into that video, thanks a lot. It really helped out, and it was awesome to see that sort of traction on a brand new podcast. So keep it up. We're trying to get to 1,000 followers, and I hope you guys like the weird stuff too, because that's pretty much what we cover. Here on the 21CD podcast, which stands for 21st Century Dystopian, by the way, we cover all relevant modern news that relates to the strange, the unusual, and the dystopian. And we also go into some legend and lore and some of the unexplainable things that people have experienced throughout history and may or may not be continuing to this day. So, hope you guys are into that. If not, sorry to disappoint you. We do not just do music video reactions, but I think there's something here for everybody. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, we cover a vast array of different subjects, and so maybe not all of them are super interesting to you, but like, we're interesting to you, so that's why you're here.
I try very hard to be interesting to you.
You're so interesting.
Well, you're interesting to me.
Well, dang.
That's why we're here, folks. So thanks for tuning in. If you guys have a topic at all that you think relates to any of the things that I just said, feel free to shoot us an email at 21cdstudios@gmail.com. That's 21cdstudios@gmail.com, all one word, all lowercase.
Yeah, or just commented on our last video. The interaction Absolutely. We got from our last one was great, seeing so many people just have something to say. That's awesome, and that's like part of the whole community that we're trying to build. So,
mm-hmm. We read every single comment and message on my phone constantly, seeing what you guys are saying about the topics and about us. And an important thing to realize is that all of us have pretty time-consuming jobs, and we don't make anything off of this podcast. So we're here because we enjoy talking about topics that you guys may find interesting, and I hope to continue that for as long as possible. The way that you guys can help is to get your friends to like, follow, and subscribe, and if you are here for the first time, please consider that as well. One more thing that I'd like to say before we get right into it is for all of you guys out there who don't necessarily have the time to watch YouTube videos, we are on Spotify as well. I myself am a truck driver. I don't have time to watch YouTube videos. I listen to all my podcasts on Spotify. So if for whatever reason you can't watch the YouTube video, rest assured that it is on Spotify for your listening pleasure. All right, guys, today we have a really fun one for you. We did a lot of research on this one. We're going to be talking about the Lost Dutchman Mine. This is a topic that we've known about for quite some time. Our dad was an aspiring treasure hunter, and he always had books around about lost treasures and whatnot. So we've known about the Lost Dutchman Mine from a young age, and a lot of people know about the mine. So some of this might be not necessarily new knowledge to you, but we bring some interesting tidbits that I haven't seen in other videos to the table that I think you guys will like hearing about. So be sure that this is a podcast episode that you cannot live without, and you will regret for the rest of your life if you don't hear it. So we're going to talk a little bit about the Lost Dutchman Mine itself, the legend, the lore behind it. We're going to tell the story as it's roughly
been told.
Obviously, when it comes to lost treasures and stuff like that, a lot of it is speculation. A lot of it is stuff that you have to just presume is true. Pretty much everybody I've seen after reading hundreds of articles and documents on this thing over the past couple weeks, pretty much everybody has a slightly different story about the Lost Dutchman Mine. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of people who live near the Superstition Mountains, where the Lost Dutchman Mine is said to be hidden, have their own tales that are vastly different from what you will read online. And then it seems like every single treasure hunter has a different clue that is somehow unique to them. If you go on YouTube, you'll see a dozen videos saying that somebody found the Lost Dutchman Mine. And the fact of the matter is, maybe you did, maybe you didn't, we don't know.
Well, yeah, it's never been documented as found. And anytime you start looking at any type of treasure hunt or a lost treasure, part of why it's still lost is because there are like 5 or 6 different stories of where it went or how it disappeared or how the story goes. And so all of that contributes to why it is still lost and why there are slightly different takes on every single story. So we're going to unpack some of it.
And this episode, since there's a lot of information that's kind of like the gist of the story, I'm going to read you something that I pre-wrote on the new fancy computer that we have, because we needed one so desperately that I just went out on Facebook Marketplace and picked up the most affordable option. And here we are today, looking like we know what we're doing. So I'm going to go ahead and read this for you guys, and then we'll unpack it after I'm done reading it. Circa 1850... a family by the name of Peralta ran their silver mines dry in Mexico. This prompted them to look for brighter horizons, bringing them north into Arizona. Finding gold, however, was a bittersweet find, because although it was gold, and gold is sweet, they were massacred by the Apache, and death is, well, quite bitter. This instance came to be known as the Peralta Massacre, and many still question its legitimacy. Did you know that the Peralta Massacre was almost 400 people?
No.
I had always assumed that we were talking about, like, a band of merry men.
Yeah, a family.
Right, but just, like, a couple days ago, I was reading, and it was apparently upwards, some say 398, but it was about 400 people.
Wow.
That were supposedly massacred in this Peralta Massacre by the Apache.
Well, I heard that the Peralta family had received, basically, 1,200 acres of land that included parts of the Superstition Mountains in Arizona, as well as some of the surrounding land. And so I guess maybe they did have a small society of people that lived out there and worked that land.
That would make a lot of sense, because I heard that the Peraltas were somewhat of a royal family.
They received the land.
Yeah.
They got it somehow. And that guy's name was Don something Peralta.
And you know when there's a Don involved.
Mr. Don. He got what's good.
Rumor has it that, assuming the massacre actually happened, only one man escaped. And for some reason, he may or may not have been responsible for giving Jacob Waltz a map to the gold mine. An alternative theory talks of a doctor, circa the Civil War, named Dr. Thorne. Thorne was known to treat Apache with the same kindness of any other human being, a trait that was uncommon among people in these times. He either treated an ailing Apache chieftain or is simply adored by the Apache as a whole. Sources are divided on this part. Either way, the Apache blindfolded Thorne and took him on a long journey through the Superstition Mountains to the location of the sacred mine known as the Lost Dutchman Mine. The Apache then removed the blindfold from Thorne's eyes, and he is told that he can take as much gold as he can carry. So this is interesting, because some people assume that the Lost Dutchman mine is like an actual mine,
mm-hmm.
but this almost implies that it is a trove.
I've read multiple articles saying that it is a stash, a pile of gold and treasure.
You can't just go into a mine and pluck gold off of the wall.
Yeah, like, it's not like it's just sitting in a pile in the middle of a cave.
Right.
It's typically, you got to dig it out of the walls.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I've read that story as well. I've read that it was a 20-mile hike into the Superstition Mountains. I've read that it was a 50-mile hike into the Superstition Mountains. But either way, he was blindfolded, brought all the way out, and then he left with his pockets and his hands full of gold nuggets and quart nuggets and gold.
Precisely. According to this story, he takes the equivalent of then $6,000 worth of gold. Today, that $6,000 would be valued at almost $300,000 worth of gold, which is not a bad deal for just not being a piece of crap human. Thorne ends up going back to civilization, however, and can't keep his mouth shut about it. There are different stories, but some say he planned to return and never made it to the mine, while others say he attempted to return to the mine but could never again find it. In the 1870s, our hero Jacob Waltz, known as the Dutchman, who was actually German, but Americans at the time couldn't understand the difference between the Dutch and the Germans, so they just called him the Dutchman.
It's derivative of Deutschland, which is Dutch for people who just don't really get that term.
Exactly. He ends up coming across a Peralta descendant who just happened to have the map that the lone survivor from the Peralta massacre had at the time of the massacre in his possession. So you were saying that there was a bar fight or something.
That's the story. The story is that these two German explorers had been looking for gold in the southwestern area of the States and had not found good luck. And eventually they found themselves in a bar where a fight happened.
Mm-hmm.
And the person mainly involved in the fight was this Peralta survivor, who then was saved by these German explorers and prospectors, Mr. Jacob Waltz. And because of his help in this bar fight, the survivor, Mr. Descendant of Peralta, gave them the map. That is the story that I read and consider to be generally true.
What I found lines up with that. Waltz ends up setting up a trip to the mountains in search of the fabled mine with several friends. This is where characters start to get hazy when it comes to their actual existence. One tale says there was a man named Jacob Weiser, who is his German buddy.
Yep.
According to this version of the story, Weiser not only had the same first name and initials as Jacob Waltz, but also came over from Germany with him and was his best friend in this strange land. Anyway, they go into the mountains in search of this trove, and months later, only Waltz returns. Everyone else is mysteriously gone. Waltz talks of yet another massacre in which everyone dies except him. But some say that Waltz actually killed everybody upon finding the mine. And when we say everybody, we're really probably just talking about his friend Weiser and this Peralta descendant and maybe like one or two other guys.
Yeah, potentially a crew of five people went out and only Jacob came back.
So this is where I start. This is where the mysteries start, in my opinion. Like, whether you believe in the Peralta massacre or anything, which, mm-hmm. I mean, you would think it would be easy to prove a massacre of 400 people.
Well, and even that place today is still called the Peralta Massacre Grounds. And so, or just the Massacre Grounds. Like, it's known as a place where several people were murdered and killed by Apache Indians.
Do you think, like, we still have a bit of story to go, but do you think it's plausible that this Jacob Waltz was able to just essentially John Wick these people upon finding this mine? Because we're talking about a time period when firearms and whatnot are pretty crude. I mean, it is the Wild West, so you still got six shooters and stuff like that, but we're talking immediately after the Civil War, so it's not...
I think it's 100% possible that he did go out there with a couple of guys and killed them. I think it's 100% possible. I don't personally believe that story. I think it's more likely that, yes, the Apaches did get to them and did kill all of his friends and he made it out somehow. Whether they let him go, just like they let one survivor go the last time, or whether or not he just made it out, I don't really know. But
the Apache version of it almost sounds better because... Did you come across the story about how pack mules ran off into the wild with saddlebags full of gold and people would still find them to this day?
No.
So apparently in the Apache Massacre version, there are a number of people who, and I'm talking about the second massacre when Jacob Waltz is actually involved, they had already mined some. And sure. They had some pack mules loaded with gold in the saddlebags. And when the Apaches attacked Waltz's group, the mules ran off and died in the wild, essentially. Mm. And people report finding bags of gold to this day.
Huh.
So that would reinforce that idea that it was an Apache massacre and not Jacob Waltz, John Wicksing these people. There's one theory that says that Waltz and Weiser came across this mysterious Peralta man, and they help the man out of a dire situation, and he awards the map as a gift. They then go a-searching, find the trove, and Waltz kills Weiser then and there, being unwilling to share the gold. Yet another story says that Waltz and Weiser are simply out and about searching for gold, since that is literally what they did for a living upon coming to America, and came across two men mining gold. They heard the men mining gold by the sound of the pickaxes hitting rock while they were around a fire at night. They found the men in the darkness, killed these men, hid their bodies, and then Waltz killed Weiser, unwilling to share the wealth. Still another theory states that Weiser never even existed at all.
I've read that before as well, that Weiser is commonly misinterpreted as Jacob Waltz, mm-hmm. and that they are one and the same person, because there's a lot of stories about Jacob Waltz.
Yeah.
I think there might even be some sketches and old like drawings of Jacob Waltz, but there's not a lot of stories about Weiser.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really know if he was real or not, but...
Some say that a corpse has indeed been found and ID'd as Weiser. His way of death was undeterminable. Some say it was the Apache after all. Others say that it was Waltz who killed him. Still others say there is something else lurking in the Superstition Mountains that killed them and continues to kill to this day. Jacob goes on to live on into a semi-old age. He ends up meeting a little lady about half his age named Julia Thomas that some say he shared knowledge of his wealth with. Her and her son, in a long story cut short, form this plan to basically steal the wealth from him while he is sick with pneumonia and they are quote-unquote caring for him. This woman even ends up doing her own expedition into the mountains, but did so in the heat of summer, so her expedition to find the mine was a massive failure. There are even stories that while Jacob had pneumonia and lay on his deathbed, she would charge members of the town $1 to talk to him before he died about where the gold was. There is irrefutable proof that Julia was in fact a real person. The story has been cut short because she and her son went through a series of disastrous attempts to find the gold and, well, failed miserably every single time, and apparently Jacob Waltz did not trust them enough to actually confide in them where his trove was before his death. Jacob dies, leaving some kind of riddle as to where his gold is, a riddle that many are still attempting to decipher to this day, and it goes something like this. From my mine, you can see the military trail, but from the military trail, you cannot see my mine. The rays of the setting sun shine into the entrance of my mine. There is a trick in the trail to my mine. My mine is located in a north-trending canyon. There is a rock face on the trail to my mine. And there are a couple different riddles like this that people sure. say Waltz said. And a lot of people have this other riddle that says something about Weaver's Needle mm-hmm. and how Weaver's Needle, there's like this mysterious imaginary circle in which Weaver's Needle is the center.
Sure.
And the treasure is within 5 miles of this Weaver's Needle. I'll put an image of Weaver's Needle up on the screen for you guys.
There's two main peaks in the Superstition Mountains, and one of them is Weaver's Needle, the other is Miner's Needle. And I'm trying to remember who it was that said that the mine was visible by 5 miles from a point. And so most treasure hunters typically look on the east side because that is where the sun falls into potentially a doorway or the entrance of a mine.
Mm-hmm.
And then they usually also look somewhere 5 miles from one of those two points.
Nobody's ever found it, so
nobody's ever claimed to have found it.
Exactly, yeah. According to Arizona Central, Ruth was a 66-year-old veteran, this guy named Ruth. I forgot. We're going to get into Ruth. What is his first? Adolf Ruth.
Adolf, yeah.
Adolf Ruth was a 66-year-old veterinarian employed by the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Bureau of Animal Husbandry, who had a long-standing obsession for locating the fabled Lost Dutchman mine. Now, Adolf Ruth is the most famous treasure hunter to have looked for this treasure to date.
And this was in 1932.
Right. So this is about 50 years, maybe even 60 years after Waltz has already died.
Yeah, I mean, maybe even closer to 80. Because he supposedly died in like 1850s, right?
1870s.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
1850s is like when the Peralta's found.
Yeah, 1847. Yeah.
So, like, at this point, we skip ahead a little bit because nothing really happens. Nobody finds the gold. Nobody's really sure. There's a lot of story about how even, I think it's like Waltz's son comes over from Germany and tries to help find the gold and can never do it, or Waltz kills him. There's a bunch of Waltz's, quote-unquote, friends who try to find the gold and can never find it. There's that famous story about the two army guys who come back from the Civil War and look for it and end up dead. and stuff like that. But mm-hmm. the most famous treasure hunter to have looked for it is this Adolf Ruth. When he acquired a number of maps to the old mines, he began looking. Ruth became something of an amateur treasure hunter, and in an attempt to find a mine in California, he had fallen down a ravine, permanently injuring one of his legs. This is something that Adolf Ruth did. He was a treasure hunter. By 1931, Ruth became convinced that one of the crudely drawn maps in his possession would lead him to the Dutchman's mine, but his luck wasn't any better than it had been in California. Within days, Ruth had disappeared without a trace. It wasn't until later that campers discovered a note in a bottle written by Ruth saying that he had, again, broken his leg and needed help. But perhaps of more interest was the note's casual postscript, P.S. Have found the lost Dutchman. When Ruth's body was found in a gold lust-fueled search in December of 1932, the mystery only deepened. Although Ruth's note concerning his broken leg and need for help led searchers to believe that he must have starved to death waiting for rescue, as Arizona Central reports, new theories popped up after the discovery of his skull with a hole in it that, according to the coroner's reports, was created by an Army-style 44 caliber revolver. Now, weren't there two holes?
I don't know if there were two, but I did hear that he went out there with a few other Army veterans. I heard that he went out there with a couple of them, and their bodies were also found without their heads.
The most common suggestion, of course, was that Ruth was killed for his maps by someone else familiar with the legend of the Dutchman's mine, though officials suggest suicide was more likely, of course. But in Thunder God's Gold, Barry Storm alleges that on his own search for the mine, he had barely escaped the fire of a sniper that he called Mr. X, who he believed was protecting the mine. He suggests that Adolf Ruth may have gotten too close and fallen prey to this mysterious sniper, who apparently uses a revolver instead of a rifle. Wait, it gets weirder. A month after the discovery of Ruth's skull, the rest of his remains were found almost a mile away, confirmed by the presence of the steel plate in his leg from his previous treasure hunt heckup. Among the relics of his body was a checkbook in which he had been writing daily notes of his adventures. In this book was a description that modern Dutch hunters believe proves that he found the mine, which was punctuated with Julius Caesar's classic dunk on King Pharnaces II, Veni, Vidi, Vici. I came, I saw, I conquered. Okay. That part always throws me off. Whenever I read that, everybody says that that's what happened, and I'm just kind of like, why would you write that?
I mean, I've read that as well, that, yeah, he finished one of his journal logs with the quote from Julius Caesar, I came, I saw, I conquered, which is like poetic in its own right. And like having been exploring and looking for something for maybe half of your life and finally finding it, I would probably write something down that was very impactful to me.
Yeah, as your last words.
Yeah, if I was dying in a canyon, I at least found what I was looking for.
Sometime around the 1950s, the Peralta Stones were discovered, a pair of stone tablets with bizarre markings that seem to be linked to the mine. Some say that they are fake, while others study these stones religiously, hoping to crack the code. Over the years, many have died in search of the gold, and to this day, it's still unsure whether the gold is an actual mine or even a cache. Some say it is left over from when the Spaniards came through much earlier and were killed off by, quote, things in the woods, slowly but surely until there were none of them left. Some say it was a hoard assembled by the Apache, taken from the miners that they had killed and all hidden in the same place, and some even questioned the Aztecs' involvement. So that's the story.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a lot of speculation on exactly what happened, but that is a general story of what you can really expect if you ever look up the topic. And there's a lot that really goes into that, but, you know, the Cliff Notes version is this guy, Jacob Waltz, found a mine, got rich off of it, started living a wealthy life, and then as he was dying, he told his caretaker that there's a mine out there, and it's never been found. And there's also been a lot of very strange disappearances in the Superstition Mountains. There's been a lot of myths and legends about what happens in that area. And even like in older history during the 1500s, when the conquistadors arrived in that area, they were looking for a city of gold because of legend that told of some sort of gold deposit that was unlike anything anyone had ever seen before.
I've heard that, and I heard that the Apache even told them, yeah, it's out there in the superstitions.
Yeah, and a lot of them died looking for it because of the harsh environment that is that area of the States, but then the Apaches also attacked them, and
May have been something else in there.
That's another part of it, you know, like, that part of the mountains is also where the Apaches get their god, the Thunder God. And so you have this massive volcanic rock structure mountain in the middle of the desert that has all of these legends and lore coming from it. And the Apaches say their gods crawled out of the earth from there. And you've got the Spanish saying that there's a gold city tucked behind the mountains. And you've got these prospectors and treasure hunters. And you've got headless people showing up. And you've got massacres. Like, there is a lot of historical events that surround that one area. And is it just because somebody said there's gold out there?
Who knows? We're going to take a look at some of the popular deaths relating to the search for the mine and some of the legends right after this break. Be right back, guys. And we're back. Thanks for taking that quick break with us, guys. So before we went on break, we were about to go over some of the popular deaths and some of the legends and lore of the Lost Dutchman Mine. So we're just going to quickly go over all these deaths. It's important to realize that there have been to date over 600 mysterious deaths in the Superstition Mines, and a lot of them are related to this treasure hunt for this Lost Dutchman Mine. So we're just going to go over a few of the most famous ones, and I'll date them and give them to you briefly. So obviously we're going to start in 1848 with the Peralta Massacre, the first official murder in the Superstition Mountains. The Peralta family from Mexico was ambushed and killed by Apache Native Americans. As we already said, this may have been as many as 400 people, so like a certified slaughter. This was supposedly over a gold mine that the Peralta family allegedly found and was using, which is the Dutchman mine. Evidently, the Apache did not appreciate this as they cared not for the gold, they did not use it in their culture, but about the trespassing onto their land. After the massacre, the Apache allegedly buried the gold and then covered the mine. A few members of the Peralta family were able to flee and survive, and that is how we know about the massacre today. Some argue that this event is nothing more than a fable, while others argue that it's true. Where this allegedly took place is now fittingly called, as you said, the Massacre Grounds. In 1870s, a prospector named Jacob Weiser, the partner of Jacob Waltz, who is the Dutchman, died of wounds received from the Apache, according to this theory. This theory alleges that he escaped. And he disappeared. I only saw one source talking about how Weiser escaped and went on to have this sort of life where he dreamt of going back and finding the mine.
Interesting. I didn't read any accounts of him getting out.
He may never have.
Yeah, I read accounts that maybe he never existed, and then I also read accounts that he most likely died in the mountains.
In 1880, two soldiers on a search for gold went into the superstitions and disappeared. Their remains were later found, each with a bullet hole in their skulls. These are those two Civil War veterans that I mentioned. In 1881, another prospector named Joe Deering heard the story of the two dead soldiers and thought it would be a grand idea to search for the mine himself. He survived, returning to Pinal, Arizona, claiming that he had found an old mine. He described it as the most god-awful rough place you can imagine, a ghostly place. He was later killed in a cave-in of another known mine in the area, Silver King Mine, and never revealed the location of the ghostly mine that he supposedly discovered. In 1884, Pedro Ortega was found dead from a shotgun wound about 30 feet from Jacob Waltz's home, near the base of the Superstition Mountains. Waltz claimed that Ortega's partner shot and killed him after borrowing Waltz's gun, but many believe Waltz himself killed Ortega. No motive was ever found. In 1892, 13-year-old Charles Dobie was killed by an Apache in the Superstition Mountains. His home was ransacked, supplies were taken, and there was other evidence that Native Americans had been there. Charles was found a short distance from the house, shot twice in the body with his head and limbs crushed and mangled by heavy boulders that the Apache had used to stone him to death. His death is the last known death caused by the Apache. In 1896, a man named Elisha Marcus Rivas was found dead along the trail in the Superstition Mountains, in an area known today as Grave Canyon. It is not known how he died. In 1900, prospectors Silverlock and Malm started to search for the Superstition's mine. They found some gold from the Peralta Massacre. In 1910, Malm arrived at a Mormon camp in Mesa, babbling that Silverlock tried to kill him. Silverlock was deemed insane and committed to a territorial asylum. Later, Malm went to the county poor farm. Both men died within 2 years. In 1910, in an elevated cave in the Superstition Mountains, the skeletal remains of a female were discovered. They were tiny pieces of gold nuggets next to her remains. However, no fragments of clothing of any kind were found, adding to the mystery. In 1931, of course, Adolph Ruth, a 78-year-old retired veterinarian and avid treasure hunter, went missing in the Superstitions. After setting out to find the treasure with a quote-unquote Peralta map, the search for his body began after he failed to return for 2 weeks. Not until almost 1 year later was his body found near Blacktop Mesa with two bullet holes in his skull. In 1934, a man named Adam Stewart died in the Supes. It is unclear how. In 1936, Roma O'Hall, a mountain hobbyist and broker from New York, died after falling in the Supes while looking for the Lost Dutchman mine. Blah, blah, blah. In 1937, another prospector named Guy Hermitite Frink, who had made several successful treks into the Superstitions to find gold, without dying, finally ran out of luck after he was found dead from a gunshot wound to the stomach on the side of a trail. Next to his decomposing body was a small stack of gold ore. In 1945, Barry Storm, a treasure hunter on search for the lost mine, claims to have narrowly escaped from a sniper in the Superstitions. He believes that Adolph Ruth might have been a victim of the same sniper. Who this sniper is and what was his goal is unknown. In 1947, James Cravey searched for the Lost Dutchman mine. In February, his headless skeleton was found in a blanket, his skull found about 30 feet away. Coroner's jury ruling was no evidence of foul play. In 1949, Jason Kidd went to work in the Superstitions, only to never return. The main theory is that he had fallen down a canyon to his death, but his body has never been found. In 1951, an Oregon man named John Burns, Dr. John Burns, was found with a single bullet hole through his body. Even though there was no powder residue, ballistics experts believe he was shot from a distance. So the sniper idea strikes again. His death was ruled a suicide. In 1952, Joseph Kelly disappeared. His skeleton was discovered near Weaver's Needle in May 1954. He was shot from above. Coroner's jury decision was accidental. Again in 1952, two men from California named Ross Blay and Charles Harshbarger also disappeared in the Supes, never to be found again. In 1955, a 16-year-old boy named Charles Massey was accidentally killed in the Superstitions by a bullet that ricocheted off of something, probably a rock, while he was out hunting javelinas with four other boys. Interesting. In 1956, Martin Ziwotho was found dead in the soups after going missing for several weeks. He had been searching for the mine. A month after he was reported missing, his body was found with a bullet hole above his right temple. Even though the gun was found underneath his body, which is something usually deemed physically impossible if one commits suicide, his death was ruled a suicide. In 1958, a deserted campsite was discovered along the northern edge of the Superstition Mountains. There was a bloodstained blanket, a gun cleaning kit, but no gun, cooking utensils, and letters from which the names and addresses had been torn out. No trace of the camp's occupants have ever been discovered. In 1959, Stanley Hernandez and Benjamin Ferreria believed they had found the Lost Dutchman mine. Probably out of pure greed, Hernandez then murdered Ferreria at the campsite that night. Ironically, Hernandez later learned that the gold they found was pyrite, which is commonly known as fool's gold. That's messed up. In 1959, again, Laverne Rowley and Ralph Thomas went hiking in the Superstitions, only for Thomas to shoot and kill Rowley while there. Thomas claims that Rowley attacked him and that he shot him in self-defense. In 1960s, hikers found Franz Harrier's headless skeleton near a cliff. The skull was found 4 days later. 5 days later, William Richard Harvey's skeleton was found. Cause of death, unknown. Again in 1960, Robert St. Marie was killed by Edward Piper while looking for the gold. Again in 1960, the remains of William Harvey Jr. were found. His causes of death remains unknown. There's a lot going on here.
Yeah, I think we're seeing a trend.
There's a few more. In 1961, Hilmer Charles Bowen's body, buried beneath sand, was found near the mountain's edge. He had been shot in the back. Some reports say he was discovered by a family picnicking, while other sources say it was school children who found him. Again in 1961, the body of Walter Mowry was found near Weaver's Needle. He was from Denver, Colorado, and had come to camp and hike. Some say it was suicide. 63, Vance Bacon fell to his death from the top of Weaver's Needle. However, there are reports of rifle shots and indications of foul play. It remains unsolved or an accident. 64, brothers Richard and Kremis, Richard and Robert Kremis were found by searchers in the mountains after going missing. They were discovered in a snow-covered canyon where they had succumbed to the elements. They had gone hunting and died. 64, again, Jay Clapp vanished, his headless skeleton discovered 3 years later. 1970, body of Albert Morrow was found in a tunnel after he was crushed to death by a boulder. 73, during an employment dispute, Charles Lewing shot and killed some guy named Sancho Guerrero at Jacob's campsite at the base of the mountain. He claimed self-defense. 76, Harold Lewis Poling accidentally shot and killed himself inside his campsite near the Superstitions. He had slung his .44 revolver over his shoulder, and when he leaned over his bed, the revolver fell and discharged upon hitting the ground. Poling was hit in the left side, penetrating his lungs and spleen, and he died of internal bleeding. Again in 76, Dennis Joseph Brown was found murdered in the mountains. He was shot one time in the chest with a .22 bullet. Nobody knows. Mexican cowboy in 1978, Manuel Valdez was murdered by unknown quote-unquote assassins that allegedly laid in wait a short distance from his house near the Superstitions. He was shot several times for seemingly no reason. His body was buried inside the Superstition Mountains in Fraser Canyon and was discovered only because Valdez's dog, Prieta, laid at the foot of his grave until someone came to the ranch and found him. In 1980, Rick Fenning went hiking in the soups only to disappear. His body was eventually found near Trap Canyon. There's a couple more, guys. You guys get the gist, though. People are dying here, and these deaths go on. Like, I'm trying to cut this short because I literally have a whole nother page of deaths. But we're talking up until 2023, this year, where mysterious plane crashes seem to have started happening in the superstitions. The mystery lives on. I'll put some photos up because I found some pictures of the plane crash, and it doesn't show much, but it is harrowing to say the least to see the expanse of these superstition mountains with just a plume of crashed plane smoke coming out of it. But I'm interested in hearing your take on what you think is killing people in the superstition mountains and why it seems to mainly be murder.
I mean, that's a long list of people that go missing. Like, that is a long documented list of people that just have gone missing in that area. And then, yeah, the way that they end up dying, losing their heads or bullet shots to the head, those are very rarely isolated accounts of suicide.
Right.
Especially when you're out in an area like that where it is safe to bring a firearm and you don't really plan on using it, but you have it to protect yourself. So it's not like you go out looking for a treasure and you're like, well, I can't find it, I guess I'll kill myself. Like, that isn't that isn't how most of these people are passing up in this area. And, you know, in a few episodes ago, we talked about the Naha people from the Nahanni Valley who have stories and potentially legends of then later becoming parts of the Apache tribe and parts of those people. And the Naha people were known for beheadings and cutting people's heads off. And so part of my thought process with this whole story is, like, I feel like it's a more ancient people. A more ancient people that has been there and will be there for a long time. And when their sacred ground is tampered with, they take care of it. And
yeah,
the sniper idea is very interesting as well, but it's still like, why? Like, why would there be a sniper or somebody out there protecting these mountains from just regular travelers in some of these instances? But
so I have some crazy ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not all mine. They're things I found. But yeah, like, what if there is, this is an idea that I've heard, and some of the people who live in the area believe this wholeheartedly. They believe that there was, like, there still is a small group of Apache who live in the woods, like descendants of the great Apache, and they still defend their sacred land. Because treasure or not, it's kind of like they said with the Peralta massacre, like, it wasn't about the gold. It was about the fact that they were protecting their sacred land. Mm-hmm. And some say that that continues to this day, that descendants of those Apache are just still out here killing.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that's a valid possibility in my mind. I think, again, just because we're so civilized in the modern era, it's hard to imagine a group of people that do live off the land and in the wilderness that do have power over an area, and that's why we just don't go there. It's hard to imagine that, but I don't think it's impossible.
Well, it doesn't even have to be like they're living off the land. Like, when you think about, like, when we went down south for our last trip,
yeah,
we found plenty of evidence of Native Americans still living on their old lands. So, yeah, like, they don't even have to be living off of the land. Maybe there's, like, a group of them that are just like, all right, it's your turn. Go guard the soups.
Yeah.
If anybody gets too close to these locations, just shoot them, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and it seems like what is relatively noticeable from all of those different accounts is anybody who actively goes out there looking for the treasure has a more likely chance of not coming back.
Yeah.
And there was another account of this kid that I read about. He was 35 years old.
Is that what you're looking at?
Yeah, he's...
Oh, I thought I was just boring you.
No, he's 35 years old, and he went out in 2009, and his room was full of maps and documents, and he had been out there three times, and on his third time, he never came back. And then volunteers with the Superstition Search and Rescue Organization found his remains wedged in an impossibly tight crevice about 30 feet off the ground. And they say he may have fallen from a ledge above the crevice. No idea how he could have gotten up there, but his official cause of death is still unknown and not really reported. There's no trauma to his skull, and his bones were wedged in such an inaccessible spot that flooding and animals couldn't touch him. Almost like he was put there. Like he was...
dropped in.
Dragged there by something and left there in a place where nobody would find him. And somehow we did, but again, there's no real... nobody knows how he really died. But another treasure hunter, a 35-year-old guy looking for this treasure. And it seems like in all of those instances where somebody goes out there looking for the treasure, those are the ones that likely don't come back. And that is weird in of itself. But... I don't know. Like, I don't know how you have a murder or a disappearance every single year for the past 130 years. And...
well, and those are just the famous ones.
Yeah, those are just the yeah. notable ones that made the paper or whatever right. they are. But, like, that does make you wonder, like, what is going on in those areas? And... The quick and relatively easy answer when you've got gunshots and bullet wounds is like, well, it's people.
It's a serial killer.
It could be a serial killer. It could be a tribe of people out there, a small collection of people who maybe do know where the mine is and are not going to let anybody find it. And when you're out there in the sticks and you shoot a gun, like, nobody knows where that comes from.
There's a lot of situations in serial history, serial killer history and lore and whatnot that lead people to speculate that those serial killers who have many, many victims don't work alone. Like there's one sure. guy who becomes famous for the serial killings, but it's extremely possible that he had or she had assistants and a number of other people who assisted in the killings. And I could easily see, after all of the gunshot wounds, and, well, gunshot kill wounds, I could definitely see how that could be a literal sniper who walks around in the woods, maybe a couple snipers.
Yeah.
And they just... that doesn't have to be, like, any backwoodsman or anything like that.
No.
That could be any regular person with a high-powered rifle who goes into the woods... and just occasionally pick somebody
decides
off.
Decides to hunt humans.
Yeah, because yeah. the superstitions are so secluded, and because of how harsh the environment is, backwoods people, they go missing all the time.
Right.
It's such a hard place to find people.
Right.
And so it would make perfect sense if you're a serial killer who isn't there for the publicity of it, but you just... I say that like serial killers just do it for the publicity. I know they don't, but like right. a lot of serial killers leave trademarks.
Right.
And if you're not like that, if you're just, no, I'm just hunting something bigger than deer out here. And right. you go for humans, I can't think of a better place than the Superstition Mountains.
Yeah. The ones that are really odd are the beheadings. Those ones are like...
that almost does seem like a trademark move.
That is more of a statement. Like, mm-hmm. anytime you remove somebody's skull from their body...
that's you're dehumanizing.
You are telling a very specific story to stay away. And...
well, there's a lot of old stories, too, about how that eliminates people's ability to get to heaven.
Yeah, how it basically disgraces them in a way that removes their soul.
Yeah.
And... those are the type of things that make me think it is almost like a monster. It is almost something unhuman out there that is destroying life. And even if it is a human species of a person, it is not human. If it's the same thing doing all of those beheadings, that is somebody who has lost their humanity.
Yeah.
Because you just can't, especially without getting any real recognition, like, what's the point?
Yeah.
You could just kill them. You don't have to remove their head and throw their body 4 miles away.
And that goes back to my concept, or my idea, I should say, that maybe this is a group of people who truly believe that this is sacred ground and all trespassers are committing crimes against this sacred ground, and they think that they are righteously defending it in some mm-hmm. way. There's rumors that even giant bones have been found in the superstitions, that crystal skulls have been found, that portals have been found. There's this guy who I'm not going to name. I'm going to try to get an interview with him because he's crazy, but he was a guide in the Superstition Mountains, and he started talking about experiencing portals and sort of time shifts and giants out here, and all of his social medias got nuked. He just disappeared off the face of the planet, and I found him the other day, and I'm going to try to get him on. But one really interesting thing is that, do you remember ever hearing or reading about that Vatican Lucifer lens?
It sounds familiar.
So the Vatican set up this telescope to look into space, and,
yep.
and the acronym for it
Lucifer. Yeah, it was Lucifer. Yeah.
So that is on Graham Mountain, which is just to the southeast of the Superstition Mountains. And
really?
It's also one of the Apaches' four sacred peaks.
Oh, interesting.
We'll get right into that right after this break, guys. And we're back. So yeah, anyway, that Lucifer lens is on Mount Graham, which is next to the Superstition Mountains. And apparently the Vatican went to court with the Apache about it, because the Apache were like, you can't just take our land. Like, this is one of our sacred peaks.
Yeah.
And the Vatican, of course, with their infinite resources, won the court battle and
course
placed their telescope on top of Mount Graham.
Wouldn't be the first time that the Catholic Church has placed their structures on top of death.
But it's interesting because the Apache say this is a place of power.
Right.
So why would the Vatican also want, you know what I mean? Like, it makes it feel like everybody who is in power or who's been there for a long time knows that there is something about this place.
Well, and that's one of the places in the States that's like one of those registered dark sky places in the country. And so from a like astronomy perspective, it makes a lot of sense because there's very little light pollution.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, there's a bunch of other places that you could do that aren't considered sacred grounds to an entire culture and people. And you know, that is very strange. I've never known that before. It's also weird that they would have like that little outlet so far from Italy. But you know, there's been strange sounds and strange sightings in the Superstition Mountains for hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm.
And even like, again, to bring it back to the conquistadors, they left that area, and they're pretty much the ones who ended up giving it the name of the Superstition Mountains, because they were just like, whatever is going on here, is our city of gold is not worth losing all of us for. And so they left, and I've read accounts of people hearing voices and screams in the mountains. I've heard strange lights above the mountains and strange astronomical sightings that don't make sense. And then you tie that in with like the deep-rooted belief by the Apache people that that is sacred ground and that there is something holy, or at least spiritual that lives in those hills and in those rocks. It's like, and we get to this point in a lot of our podcasts,
right,
where it's just like, how do you justify these things with just rationale and logic?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why they're so interesting and the reason why they're still topics today is because there isn't a logical answer for these things.
Mm-hmm.
Another site I was just looking at talked about several bodies that were found in between 1955 and 1978 that don't have names. They don't know who they are, but there was several corpses found with holes in their heads, and then two more cadavers were found without their heads, and investigators were never able to find their heads. And so they were just unknown,
nameless bodies.
Unknown bodies that were just found in these mountains with no heads. An animal doesn't just take the head somewhere.
No.
Like, that is not animalistic by any means. It's also not even predatorial. Like, the head is typically the only thing that's left behind. The rest of it is dragged
human,
somewhere else. Like, yeah, it's a monster or it's human.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, you tie in all of those accounts, and then you've got powerful religious entities saying, yes, we're going to build our structures right next to these areas where all of these strange things happen. Weird. It's just weird. And over the last 100 and some years of documented instances where we have people going missing, there's, like you said, 500 more where we don't even know who they were, when they went missing, why their bodies were found without their heads.
This is one of those places where, and I usually hesitate to say this sort of stuff, but like, this is one of those places where I actually believe that it's extremely possible that there is an evil curse on the land. You know, especially when you get into the tales of people killing each other on the land.
Yeah.
It almost does feel like, because I mean, evil exists, so evil curses exist. Dark magic, evil magic is a real thing. And I think that it's completely possible that there is a curse on the land. Like, this is land that is evil and is dark, despite how beautiful it is to your everyday hiker.
Mm-hmm.
This is somewhere that, you know, for whatever reason has been disgraced enough for there to be a curse that stands the test of time.
Yeah, well, and that's why, like, you know, we kind of started getting into, like, exploring the unknown very casually with, like, urbexing and, mm-hmm. like, exploring abandoned places. And even in some of those places that don't have a long, long history, you feel what stories the walls have.
Right.
And, like, if you have a place like that, where it is this sacred ground where time after time and year after year, very tragic events happened and multiple people have passed, you can't tell me that that place doesn't still have some blood in the soil.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you can't tell me that there still isn't a feeling that you get from those areas that are just a little bit uncharted.
Well, I mean, the 600 deaths that we mentioned doesn't even count the people who are just missing.
Right.
Vanished without a trace.
Yep.
And, like, it's when you hear about, like, some of the people who are near there, who live near there, talk about things wandering in the woods.
Yeah.
Like, literal things they can't explain. There's even rumors of cannibals out there. Like,
yeah.
And, of course, you can't let your imagination run away with it, because whenever there's something like this, it does become, like, a Hardy Boys book, where it's,
right.
like, what is going on? Well, it could be anything. You know, obviously, even people believe in aliens. Apparently, the Apache have tales of meeting their star brothers and sisters
right.
in the superstitions
sure.
as well, which,
yeah.
I mean, who's to say no? But, like, all of this to say, we have no idea, but it seems like something that is more than just
people falling off the rocks.
Exactly. People falling off the rocks.
People falling off the rocks.
People going there to kill themselves.
Right. It doesn't seem like that type of story. And, you know, another thing we talked about the other day is, like, what if there is some sort of off-the-grid cult that
mm-hmm.
lives out there in the woods, and part of what they do is they cut people's heads off?
Dude, another thing I want to bring up which I love that. But like another thing I want to bring up, you and I have gone camping all over the place. We've been in some pretty weird spots and everything. Yep. But the amount of times that we have felt the need to bring a firearm were relatively few. So it feels like, and we've been in some spooky woods, but I feel like when all of these people are going in with firearms and then they're also dying, it's like, so you were pretty much being as prepared as you could be prepared, and whatever it was still got the upper hand on you.
Yeah. And I mean, when you are out there in some of those places, you do feel unprepared in a way. Kind of all the time, even when you have everything you need.
Mm-hmm.
And like, we've camped up near Canada, we've camped in Maine on the East Coast, we've camped in Death Valley, we've camped on the Mexico border in Texas, we've camped in the middle of the States, we've camped Iceland, Europe, aside from Iceland, South America, like we've camped all over the place. And you typically do feel like you are the
imposter.
You are the imposter. Yeah. You're the thing that shouldn't be there.
Right.
And I think when you go to some of these places that are known for their danger to humans, that brings a different kind of fear just based off of the stories and the legends.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to give you some form of anxiety that you might not get if you were just in the calm woods of northern Wisconsin, you know?
I 100% agree. Let's do two questions and then we'll close it out. Do you believe that the Lost Dutchman mine is still there? Do you believe there's still gold to find?
Yes.
Do you think the gold is the Lost Dutchman gold? Or do you think it's just gold in general?
If I were to actually have a strong opinion on what I think is out there, I would say that it probably is more of a trove.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, it was a very well-used mine by a handful, two, maybe one person, and potentially the Apaches. And now it is a buried cave that is full of whatever these two or one guys couldn't bring with them.
Sure.
A pile of gold ore in the center of their long path back up towards the entrance,
mm-hmm.
and potentially even a place where the Apache did put relics and also brought their gold that they didn't need. And then after the whole thing with the Peraltas starting to pull gold from some of these mines, the Apaches were like, this is never going to happen again. They closed it up. They filled it with rocks. They made it impossible for anybody to find. And so if it does exist, I think it is probably a pile of ore, gold, treasure, doubloons, whatever you want to call it, that's sitting deep inside one of these mountains that not even like...
You can't metal detect in that.
No, you can't metal detect that. You can't use one of those ground scanning devices. You can't even really get there unless you like know where to go, and it's probably just buried under thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds of rock and soil. That's what I think, if it does exist, is still out there.
Do you think that it's something paranormal that's killing people off, or at least causing people to kill each other off? Or do you think it's just a classic case of humans doing human stuff?
I think it's both.
Yeah.
I think that there is some form of spiritual presence there that does help to make people lose their minds a little bit. And whether it is just the fear and the anxiety of being in terribly hostile environment combined with the spiritual existence of hundreds and hundreds of deaths in history, that alone would put people on edge. And then like, gold has done that to people forever.
It's true.
People kill for gold. People kill for money. And so like, even with somebody that you have a good relationship with, if you go out there and you get the taste of gold and all of a sudden you have less because you have somebody with you, combine that with the spiritual aspect, I think there's something there that is not human. I also think it could be people that are just out in those hills and have no remorse or feeling for other people. And every once in a while, they kill them. I think it's a little of both.
Sounds scary, whatever it is. Can't wait to go camping there.
Yeah, let's go, dude.
I'm going to close out with a YouTube comment that I read that somebody left on a Superstition Mountain video that I thought was interesting. I am Native American, Salt River, Pima, Scottsdale, Arizona. My grandparents raised me on the reservation. We have legends about the Superstition Mountains. It was ingrained in me to never go there. There are many strange disappearances. People go into those mountains and no traces are found. The Apaches never got along with our tribe, and they were not a friendly tribe, so we stayed far away from them. There is more to this mountain range, a lot more. As Pima Indian, I will not go there. I was told the Apaches still hide inside and protect the Superstition Mountains. So you guys believe whatever you want. There's a lot more to go through on the Superstition Mountains, but, you know, we're at a little over an hour now, so I feel like this is a pretty good place to close it out. Thank you all for listening. This was a really fun episode. Remember to like, follow, subscribe, and find us on Spotify and give us a 5-star rating if you use Spotify. That would help us break into the algorithm a lot. And remember, don't drink the water and question everything. Bye, guys.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.